Okay, so Stephen Wright is going to talk about Remex, a very nice plant genus to study plant sex chromosome evolution.
Okay, well, thank you, Gabriel, and thanks to Tatiana and all of the organizers for this great event. It's great to be reminded that my colleagues exist in three dimensions, so it's very nice to see everybody. So I'm going to pick up on some of the themes from Tatiana's talk and also Tomas on the questions around why recombination is suppressed on sex chromosomes and in supergenes more generally, and how that proceeds. And as Gabriel mentioned, we're focusing on the genus Remex. So let's see. This work has been a large collaborative effort. So it's been a long-term collaboration with Spencer Barrett, and there's a lot of very talented graduate students and postdocs involved in this work. Postdoctoral fellow Joanna Rifkin has led a lot of the work, along with Felix Beaudry, Haranju, Zoe Humphreys, Baharo Chuthuri, Pazi Rastas, Bianca Sachi, Meng Wang, Tyler Kent, and Josh Huff. So I wanted to acknowledge all the people involved in this work right away. So when we think about this question, why is recombination restricted on the sex chromosomes? As we heard from Tatiana, there's one overarching sort of classical model. And the idea there is that there's the recurrent adaptive spread of modifiers of recombination, particularly due to sexually antagonistic selection, where these recombination modifiers spread in order to allow sexually antagonistic variants to stay linked to the chromosome in which they're favored. We've heard about some recent models, and we will hear about another one from Paul upcoming as well, that also have the idea that there's the recurrent adaptive spread of recombination modifiers, but due to various other alternative mechanisms, like the sheltering of deleterious mutations or regulatory divergence, as we heard from Thomas. There's other classes of models that might explain this. So there's neutral models where maybe the spread of recombination suppression is actually neutral because, for example, sequence divergence around the sex-linked region causes adjacent regions to suppress recombination. And or the suppression of transposable elements in sex-determining regions might contribute via their silencing to further spread of recombination suppression. And then there's also the potential role of pre-existing recombination suppression. So if sex-determining regions appear in pre-existing regions of low recombination, then this may contribute in important ways to the trajectory of sex chromosome evolution. And Deborah Charlesworth has recently emphasized that possibility in guppies, and I think we'll hear more about that tomorrow. These possibilities are clearly not mutually exclusive, but it's very interesting and important to try to understand and disentangle their relative roles. So we've been doing this in the genus Rumex, and in particular, one focal species has been Rumex acetatulus. So this is a particularly interesting system where we have two sex chromosome cytotypes within the same species. So these two cytotypes exist on either side of the Mississippi River in the US. And to the west of the Mississippi, we sort of have a classic XY system that we're very familiar with mammals and Drosophila. And east of the Mississippi River, there's been an X autosome fusion that's created a neo-X chromosome. And then this segregates as a trivalent with two Y chromosomes. So we have the formation of a neo-Y and a neo-X chromosome. And over the last several years, we've generated PacBio reference genomes for, first of all, the west side, the original XY system. This was an earlier generation assembly, so we have a chimeric assembly of the sex chromosomes here. And for the neo-sex chromosome system, with high-coverage, high-fi PacBio sequencing, we've been able to generate highly phased assembly where we can assemble completely the fused X chromosome and separate that out from the Y chromosomes. So we have a number of new genome assemblies tied to linkage mapping that will help us understand the evolution of this system. And from earlier work focused on transcriptome data, we were able to show that this system is somewhere along the way to degeneration. This is looking at the XY system, so we're looking at the old Y here. So we estimated about 20 to 25% of genes have lost a copy on the Y in this XY cytotype. And we see a strong elevation of DNDS, so a highly elevated rate of slightly deleterious mutations accumulating on the Y chromosome. And when we fit this to models of link selection, we can basically explain this deleterious mutation accumulation from a model of link selection fit to polymorphism data. So we see significant signs that we have a large non-recombining region on the Y that is experiencing degeneration via selective interference. Now, when we look at the linkage map, we were able to identify the sex-linked region. This is in the what we're calling the Texas cytotype. So this is the XY cytotype. So we're able to identify the chromosome that's the sex chromosome. And when we look at sex-averaged recombination rates, what we see is that most of the chromosome is in a region, so the sex-linked region, is in a very large region of extremely low recombination. This is not just in males, since this is sex-averaged. So what we're seeing is a giant non-recombining region where we find the sex-linked region. We see this again on the neosex chromosome system, except now the size of the non-recombining region has, of course, expanded. So we have hundreds of megabases of extremely low recombination surrounding the sex-linked region. Again, this is sex-averaged, so this can't just be because X and Y is not recombining. What we seem to see is an extremely large non-recombining region in general here. Furthermore, when we look at the linkage map of the ancestral autosome that became this neosex chromosome, we can see that this region of suppressed recombination that became sex-linked was already non-recombining to begin with. So we're starting to see signs that we have ancestrally low recombination in this region that ends up tied up in this sex-linked non-recombining region following the fusion event. So we have a large non-recombining region that was already not recombining before the fusion. Now, finding this region of very low recombination is not unique to the sex chromosomes. Essentially, all autosomes have regions of highly suppressed recombination across most of their length. And in fact, many large plant genomes show these types of patterns. In barley, for example, barley shows extremely large regions of very low recombination around the centers of chromosomes, around the centromeres. So in Rumex, we estimate that about 80% of the genome has highly suppressed recombination. And the sex chromosome is not particularly unique in showing this pattern. But the sex-linked region happens to be in one of these very low regions of very low recombination. These regions all across the genome of suppressed recombination show all the hallmarks of sort of classic pericentromeric regions. It's just they're massive. We have hundreds of megabases where gene density is relatively low in these regions. Transposable elements, especially retrotransposons, are accumulating in these centers. DNA elements tend to accumulate in the genic regions. So essentially, most of the genome of Rumex is a giant pericentromeric region found across all chromosomes. So in general, we can think of this in terms of understanding meiosis as a function of chromosome size. So Hanel recently had this very nice review that was looking at the degree to which crossovers occur in a biased way along chromosomes, particularly towards the tips of chromosomes, as a function of chromosome length. And what they found is that in larger chromosomes, there was a much greater degree of periphery bias, where most recombination was occurring at the tips, much less in the centers. And so the idea is if you have periphery bias in general, where recombination gets initiated at the tips, and you have very long chromosomes, then basically these centers almost never have much opportunity for recombining. Whereas if you have short chromosomes, they're short enough that there's still some recombination across most of the length. So in RUMAX, basically, putting it into this context, we have chromosomes that are about 300, 400 megabase long, and the periphery bias would sort of be off the charts on the ceiling here. So RUMAX seems to be an extreme version of this periphery biased recombination that's creating these large central regions of low recombination that might be contributing to the formation of a large heteromorphic sex chromosome here. So we can put this in the context of some comparative look that was recently done by Renner and Muller on the sizes of sex-determining regions in plant genomes. So they looked at across different plant sex-determining regions that have been characterized, the percent of the genome that's found in sex-determining regions and how many genes are found in those regions. And in general, plant sex-determining regions are relatively small with relatively few number of genes, with a couple of exceptions, and this is cannabis out here. Now, if we put RUMAX on this scale, in fact, RUMAX has a much larger fraction of the genome that's tied up in the sex-determining region with thousands of genes involved. And when we look at the neosex chromosome, that's even gotten larger. So we have up to about 20% of the genome, and again, thousands of genes tied up in these regions of very low recombination. So with our assembled Y chromosome, the total length is over 600 megabase, and we have over 5,000 genes in this region. And so the general idea here, given the similar patterns on the sex chromosomes and the autosomes, is that the ancestral genome structure in RUMAX might have very much contributed, this pre-existing large low recombination region, may have contributed to having a very large non-recombining region on the Y chromosome, and that might contribute to making it more likely to become a large heteromorphic sex chromosome system. And when we look at supergenes more broadly in plants, of course, Tanya spoke about Lenum this morning where this was not the case. But in other supergene systems, it has been found that other sex-determining regions and actually other self-incompatibility and diastyle loci are often found in these regions of in pericentromeric regions of low recombination. So the idea is that supergenes and sex-determining regions might often form in these regions that are already have low recombination. And that can, of course, help facilitate their formation. Because one of the big challenges of forming a supergene to begin with is, of course, the challenge of recombination. And I just wanted to take a bit of a side note, because this is a broader supergene talk, to speak briefly about our studies of tri-styly loci. So this is a similar system to what Tanya spoke about. But in this case, we have three different floral morphs. So there's a long, a mid, and a short style morph. And this corresponds to differences in anther height. And the genetics has long been known from crossing data. And it involves, in this case, two different genes with epistatic interactions to form these three different style morphs. And so we were interested in characterizing the genetics of this supergene system in the species Icornia paniculata. And this is a work of Haron Zhu. And so using similar approaches to Tanya, Haron did a genome-wide association study and identified the S and M loci involved in this tri-styly supergene. And it turns out we see very broad signals across a very large region, which turns out to be a region of very low recombination across most of the genome. Interestingly, these two loci, two epistatic loci, are on either side of this large, giant pericentromeric region in Icornia on the same chromosome. So more generally, these patterns, of course, again, are not mutually exclusive of the role of these other possibilities. But we're seeing signs that pre-existing recombination suppression might have been important here in the formation of the sex chromosomes in RUMAX, and actually might be important in our understanding of why some species have very large, heteromorphic, highly degenerated sex chromosomes, and others are quite small. But just to backtrack, as I mentioned before, we see signs of degeneration and selective interference on the Y compared to the X. So if recombination was pre-existing low in both males and females and on the X and the Y, why does the Y actually degenerate? Why do we see these clear signatures of link selection on the Y compared to the X? Well, that's where sex-specific recombination maps become important. So we went back and characterized recombination in male versus females. And what we saw was that, so the recombination map in males is shown here in purple, and in females in green. What we see is strong heterochiasmy. So males have, in general, lower recombination rates than females. And in particular, although these regions of low recombination on all of these chromosomes are low in both males and females, males have essentially giant stretches of zero recombination, at least within the context of this mapping population, whereas females show some signs of crossing over. So if we estimate the size of regions of no recombination on the autosomes and on the sex chromosomes, we see that it's much larger in males than in females. So males here have giant stretches of no recombination, whereas females don't. And so about 44% of genes in the entire genome are tied up in these regions with zero male recombination at all. Again, at least in the context of our mapping population. So if you're going to throw a sex-determining region anywhere onto these chromosomes, you're actually quite likely to hit a region that, because it's a sex-determining region, now experiences no recombination in males, essentially automatically. And so that's our basic idea here. Now, this ratio is the largest on the sex chromosome, so we don't want to rule out the possibility of additional recombination modifiers, but this pre-existing recombination suppression likely does play a very important role. And again, it's specifically in males, and so this can help explain why the Y degenerates, even though it was already in a highly non-recombining region. So using our genome assemblies, we can start to ask whether we also see further degeneration in terms of repeat content and repetitive DNA evolution. Basically, as I mentioned, these are large pericentromeric regions to begin with. So if things are bad, can they still get worse, is sort of the question here. As I said, we were able to sort of fully assemble and get phased assemblies of the two haplotypes. So on this axis here, we have the X chromosome, the X neo X, which we were able to fully assemble here. And on the Y axis, we have the other haplotype of this male, where the Y sequences are found in about five major scaffolds. So we have one major scaffold representing the fused X chromosome, and five major scaffolds representing these two Y chromosomes. The old Y here, which you can see is extremely scrambled in gene order, and the neo-X and neo-Y, which is generally syntenic with a few signs of some inversions happening. So this fully assembled Y is about 650 megabases large, compared to 450 for the X. So we do see an expansion of the Y. Again, even though this X-linked region is mostly heterochromatic or pericentromeric to begin with, having this complete loss of recombination has led to further repeat accumulation. And we can see this here when we look at the density of different types of repeats, those are colored, and gene density here, where, again, these central regions of low recombination generally are very repetitive on the fused X chromosome to begin with. And although it's subtle, there is an increase, especially of copia-like elements in purple here, on this Y chromosome. And that's creating basically a couple hundred megabases extra of repetitive DNA content on the Y. So this is not a dramatic shift like Doris showed us for the neo-Y chromosome in Drosophila, because this was already quite enriched in repetitive content. But we can still see that low recombination is different from zero, and we are seeing signs of repetitive DNA invasion on this Y chromosome assembly. Finally, I just want to touch on the second point. So overall, I've argued that pre-existing low recombination is likely the major force driving the formation of these large heteromorphic sex chromosomes. But of course, I have also mentioned that there is this derived change where there has been a fusion. So we can still have evolutionary strata due to X autosome fusion events, which have created this fused X chromosome. And so what is driving this further sex chromosome expansion? And there's been a number of models, as particularly nicely laid out in this Pennell et al. Review and meta-analysis in fish and reptiles, for what might drive X autosome fusion events. So these could be neutral, driven by genetic drift. It could be driven by the action of meiotic drive, sexually antagonistic selection, or some sort of local adaptation, which may or may not be sex-specific. Because the fusion event, of course, acts as a recombination modifier, especially in our system, where it's bringing together alleles that could be locally adaptive on either side of the Mississippi River. And so we were interested in starting to understand the relative importance of these possible forces. What we do see, so when we look at whole genome data, we see that there's a very narrow climb between these two cytotypes along the Mississippi River. In general, we see high differentiation with a narrow climb here. So when we compare the assemblies of these two different karyotypes, we're able to identify the breakpoint of the fusion. Although there's a lot of scrambling here, we can pretty clearly identify the breakpoint of where the fusion occurred. And when we look at population genomic patterns here, what we see is a very detectable signal of a massive drop in shared polymorphism right at the site of the breakpoint and a big excess of fixed differences. So this is a signal of directional selection rather than just drift. And this region is also disproportionately contributing to the climb. So there's a much narrower climb around this breakpoint. Finally, and very interestingly, we see a signal of a selective sweep in this region that becomes sex-linked, even in the karyotype that is not yet sex-linked, so in the ancestral autosome. And so there's evidence of positive selection both on the fused chromosome and the ancestral autosome. And so overall, again, you know, these are not mutually exclusive, but the evidence for directional selection in both karyotypes, even before becoming sex-linked, is consistent with this idea of local adaptation playing an important role. So overall, again, just to emphasize, pre-existing low recombination is likely very important for understanding the formation of sex chromosomes. And this fusion shows hallmarks of selective sweeps in both karyotypes, suggesting a potential role for local adaptation. So I'd just like to thank everyone involved again, and thanks for your attention.